You are listening to The Ones Who Succeed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your pods. I'm Campbell Barron, or at Campbell J. Barron on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Welcome to the program. So the world of technology moves pretty fast. While I don't remember much from 2007, mainly because I was a youngster, I am aware that in 2007, primarily as a result of the launch of the iPhone, it was an important year in the world of technology. It was an important year not only because a handheld touchscreen device existed, enabling anyone to surf the web or make a call, but something else took place as a result of Apple's new phone innovation. The launch of the iPhone started a really dramatic platform shift from web to mobile. And growing up watching this platform shift take place seemed actually quite normal. I was not around for the dot-com boom, but I was growing up in a time where more and more people had smartphones, so the smartphone boom seemed like a natural step. However, it's only until reflecting on the rise of the mobile boom that I later realized how crazy and quite frankly transformational it was in the world of software. As I grew up and became more and more interested in startups, I found myself reminiscing about the App Store back in 2012, where the odds of launching a startup and an app maybe going viral was probably a little bit higher than the competitive app marketplace we see today. And sure, while the golden age of the App Store is certainly not behind us, I am more curious than ever to spot and discover the next major platform shift. After all, it's been over a decade since we've seen a new platform emerge with prominence, so what's next? Well, I think it's voice. If you're a regular listener of the show, you've heard me or perhaps some of my guests mention this before, that the possible use cases for voice are really intriguing to me, and as a result, I'm super excited to have Max Child on this program. He's the co-founder of a startup called Volley, which creates all sorts of engaging voice applications and games, like Amazon Echo Skills and Google Home Actions, in addition to some voice and narrative-led iOS apps. Needless to say, Max believes that voice will be the next major platform, and I share this opinion with him. Max is based in San Francisco, where he runs Volley today. He joined me via Zoom to discuss his ambitions for the company, the future of ambient voice, and the ups and downs of building a voice entertainment network. This is The Ones Who Succeed. I'm Campbell Barron, and I hope you're having a great day today. My conversation with Volley co-founder Max Child starts now. If you can kind of just introduce yourself, who are you and what do you do?
Sure. Yeah, my name's Max. I'm co-founder of a company called Volley, as you noted. We make games and entertainment for voice control devices like Alexa and Google Home. We have a couple categories of products that are doing well. We have sort of a music trivia game called Song Quiz, where we play short clips of pop music and you try to shout out what the title or the artist is. And so it's a good like family game, multiplayer game, you know, party experience on weekends, that kind of thing. And then we also have pretty successful kind of storytelling products, including like some choose your own adventure style stories, and one's called Guest Sire. We also have some bedtime stories that sort of help, you know, kids and families wind down at the end of the day. So those are sort of the main categories of things we're working on.
Now, it's really cool to be a Alexa skill builder or a Google Home Actions builder, or just a developer in the voice space in general. It's not as cool if nobody is using your product. So can you talk about how many kind of monthly users you have, or the latest report you've stated, how many monthly users you have across your network?
We have millions of monthly users, yeah.
So you're up there then in terms of the Alexa skill charts for sure.
I think we're doing pretty well. It's a little bit hard to tell sometimes how other people are doing, but based on reviews and conversations, I think we're very near the top. I'd like to think, I don't know, knock on wood.
And you started this, the story behind Volley, you weren't always in the kind of voice space. So how did the startup take place? How did you get into voice as an emerging platform? What's the origin behind the company?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely kind of a winding story. My co-founder, James, and I were roommates in college, and we also worked on the school newspaper together. And we sort of fell in love with, like, I don't, for better lack of a better term, the intersection of like words and technology while we were there. We got a lot better at writing, about creating stories, and also working on the technology piece. You know, one of the big initiatives when we were there was building a new website for the newspaper, and we worked on that a lot. And so it was kind of this intersection of tech and media, or tech and words, or whatever you want to call it. And then we both went into consulting out of college, and didn't really feel like it was a very creative profession, I guess, as people who had really fallen in love with like creating a product every day at the newspaper. And so we kind of quit our jobs and taught ourselves to be better programmers. We'd taken some computer science classes in college, but weren't really very good yet. So we taught ourselves to code using like online courses and everything. And so we started making iOS apps, a lot of kind of contract jobs to pay the bills, but always kind of working on our own side projects. And a lot of those, again, were like entertainment, essentially. We built, you know, a live multiplayer trivia game in 2015. We built some virtual pet games that you could actually chat with on like Facebook Messenger. So it was a little bit of like the beginnings of this focus on like conversational entertainment. You know, you're building these chat games essentially on Facebook Messenger. And then about, yeah, 3-4 years ago, I got an Alexa for my birthday from my parents and thought it was just amazing. I mean, I don't know if, you know, you had this experience the first time you used the voice product that actually worked, but it was a little bit of like an iPhone moment for me where I was like, oh my God, like we've kind of turned the corner to voice recognition actually working, you know, like the first time you could like shout at it from 100%. 10 feet away. Yeah. The first time I stood like 15 feet away from the Echo and like told it to change the music or something and it like just did it, I was like, holy crap, you know, like it was amazing. Like, like this thing actually works, you know, and obviously there's a lot to do, but like it actually works. And so we got very excited about that. And basically the only game on the platform that was really prominent at that point was Jeopardy, which was, you know, a daily trivia game. And so we were like, oh, wow, we have all these other game ideas we've been making for mobile. Like, why don't we try some of these or Facebook Messenger on voice? And so we kind of like had a weekend project of building a couple products and a couple of them started taking off. You know, one of which was Yes, Sire, was like one of our very earliest games.
You built that in a weekend?
We didn't build Yes, Sire in a weekend. The first game we built was called Spelling Bee, which was kind of what it sounds like. We did build it in a weekend. It did not work that well, mostly because letter recognition is still actually pretty bad on the platforms. Yeah. B, C, D, and E are all pretty brutal. And so that has still never worked. And so it's still up in the store. If you look, the reviews are pretty bad. And I don't know, man, we tried really hard to make it work, but it's really difficult. So that was the first one. And then Yes, Sire was a bit of a longer effort, but maybe a couple weeks. And Song Quiz we had started working on later than that, but they both were pretty quick. And then, you know, we got like, I think for Spelling Bee, we got like 1,000 users in the first week or something. And we were like, oh my gosh, like this is amazing. Like this is more popular than anything we've ever built before. We better like double down on this. And so that's kind of how it all got started and sort of just snowballed from there.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned something really important there, which was kind of the competitive aspect of the iOS App Store. I mean, when did you start kind of building iOS apps? What year was that?
13.
So it still had quite a ways to go, but towards the end of it, towards when you probably got your Alexa, it's just very competitive. And the days where you can kind of just launch an app and hope it gets downloads are definitely over now for sure without any promotion.
Yeah. I mean, those days were over, but also just like, I mean, to be honest, like we just weren't really that competent. Like, I mean, like I'm just going to like be honest, like when you're starting, like you think you know what you're doing, but you definitely don't. And I still don't necessarily know what I'm doing, but we know a lot more than we did 7 years ago. So like, you know, it's a problem. It was the mismatch of our competence with the development of the platform. I mean, right. Like you're saying, it was like 5 or 6 years old. There are a lot of pretty mature, savvy, smart people who knew how to get users, how to get growth on the platform, how to monetize, how to advertise, all this kind of stuff, right? There was like 5-6 years of like knowledge that we had kind of missed. And so we were starting from scratch against people who had 6-7 years of experience in the exact knowledge they needed to understand. And so we were just like pretty mismatched on that front.
No, I hear you. I mean, like, yeah, I mean, so, but then if you kind of look at the growth that the skill store has experienced, but even like a few years ago, much less competitive, still, it's like, I still think it's an underrated place to develop. And I still think there's tons of opportunity for new skills to take place. And I think that's part of the appeal.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously agree. I think there's a ton of areas that are really not very competitive. And I think a good skill could win. I'm not saying it would be easy and you definitely have to work at it. And you definitely have to have an understanding of how you're going to market and grow the skill. But I mean, we've launched skills just in the last year that have, taken off to a decent degree in new areas or in new game categories or whatever. And like, sure, we're able to cross promote to some degree from our existing products, but it's not like, it's not impossible to like force the boulder up the hill, I guess, like on the Alexa store. And it seems like people get discouraged pretty quickly, which I don't know. Hopefully that'll change over time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so how do you go about promotion for your skills?
Yeah, I mean, most things we kind of soft launch and just see if the user behavior is what we're hoping for, like whether it's retention, you know, hours of engagement, monetization, something like that. And then even on a very small user base, you know, tens or hundreds of people, you can get a pretty good idea of if the behavior is what you're looking for. And then, I mean, and also there's obviously an artistic element to it, which is like, do we like it? Do we think it's cool or fun or interesting, right? And if we have both of those, then we can start promoting from other skills and trying to sort of get the momentum going, telling people from, you know, Song Quiz that they should go check out something else, or Yes Sire that they should go play Bedtime Stories or something. So there's definitely a cross promotional element. And then, I mean, we have some other secrets, I guess, but I'm not going to talk about them.
Yeah, no, I get it. I guess in terms of looking at voice as a kind of new medium and a new platform, right? Something that I'm like, I've mentioned, it's compared to mobile so often, I'm obviously not the first person to do this, but I think that could be a just comparison, just in terms of the similarities. Like the comparison between drones and mobile, not that similar to the comparison of voice and mobile. Not that drones aren't going to do anything, but they're just kind of different mediums. And so I think I like that similarity, just the idea that you have this platform and then you could have developers that build on top of it in kind of consumer facing ways, and maybe B2B eventually. But it seemed like when Alexa really got a lot of early attraction was 2016, 2017, and then a little bit of 2018. That's kind of when a lot of people were like, it's happening, voice is happening. And then it seemed like it calmed down a little bit. And you kind of had your core users who were using it. I mean, Alexa as a device has definitely found product market fit in terms of checking the weather, etc. But do you think the growth that Volley, or just the ecosystem in general, do you think it's slower than you expected?
I mean, I'm happy with how we're doing. I don't know. I have to say, I don't know, whatever. Yeah. I mean, so far so good for us. I do think the ecosystem definitely did not grow as fast as you might expect, given, like, as you mentioned, 17, 18, there were a lot of developers pouring into the ecosystem. I do think that, like, I mean, it's interesting. I think that, like, voice, you keep talking about it as a platform. To me, it's a little more analogous to like multi-touch, right? It's an interface, not a platform, right? And so there's two parts of it, right? Like, is voice the next major interface? Like, I really strongly believe yes. And then like the key question is like, what are going to be the major platforms of voice as an interface, right? And I think we can say that like Alexa and Google Assistant, if those are sort of the core operating systems of like the voice future, you know, those are the platforms per se. But, you know, I think that platform growth is not always like a complete, you know, up and to the right curve, the way people sort of think of the iPhone in retrospect. And I think that like, there are certainly some features for developers that took some time to develop, you know, monetization, you know, retention features, you know, some sort of way to control your destiny with respect to getting new users and getting in front of people. And I think some of those developed quickly. Some of them maybe didn't develop as quickly as we or others were hoping for. But I honestly think the sort of hype cycle of voice hasn't really matched the actual trajectory of usage very much. Like, if you look at the actual chart of how many Alexas are selling or how many Googles are selling and how much people are using them, that really is just like an up and to the right chart. Mm. It's like, I mean, you're talking about 17, 18, 19, 20. I mean, 18 is a lot bigger than 17, and 19 is a lot bigger than 18, and 20 is going to be a lot bigger than 19. So it's sort of like,
yeah.
It's fairly relentless upward progression in terms of mm-hmm. device sales. But I do think there's like a less developer interest in the platform maybe than there was like 2 years ago. But I don't know. I think that's sort of starting to turn around more. So we may have just gone through the kind of Gartner hype cycle. And I also think there's a sort of like psychological element with voice platforms as they exist today, which is that because it's not visual, because you can't go look at the top charts every day, because it's not like sitting on your home screen and like you're playing around with it all the time. I think it flies a little bit under the radar in terms of how big it is mm-hmm. compared to more visual experiences. So, I mean, yeah, who knows? We'll see. But certainly the market is big enough for us and a number of other developers at this point where it's like, I think a third or 40% of US households have a smart speaker now or something. So, I mean, that's pretty big.
Huge.
So we're,
yeah, it's yeah. really massive just in terms of like, in just in terms of, I think it's underrated. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, on some level, we're like, man, you know, obviously we wish there was more developer interest in platform and growth and investment. And on another level, we're like,
but do
cool.
we though? Yeah, as like, the CEO like, of Volley, are we sure?
The question is, yeah, if you take like a Peter Thiel perspective that you don't want competition, or like more of a platform growth is good for everyone perspective, that like, you know, investment and creating more value there is good for all of us. And I probably lean more towards the latter approach, yeah. Jokes aside.
Yeah. No, I do too. I mean, I think I also think it's just a valid as more skills and actions are developed and are used and are loved. It's just kind of just lifts up the entire ecosystem in general.
Yeah.
I mean, so in terms of, and I'm sure there are things you can't talk about, but in terms of Volley and your development cycle and what you guys are doing, how big is the company at this point?
Yeah, I mean, we're a little over 10 people right now. So yeah, that's about the size.
And when you started, you had this idea, you started by kind of building this skill on a weekend, and then it kind of turned into this. How's the company doing at this point, right? Like, this is a pretty blunt question, and I'm not asking for financials, but what's the state of the company? Has it been easier than you thought? Has it been harder than you thought? What has kind of this journey been like as a whole?
I mean, yeah, I think to go back to the beginning of the discussion, having gone through, you know, 3 to 4 years of sort of trying to make something happen on mobile and basically, you know, failing pretty relentlessly, including with ideas that I still thought were good or still think are good, actually, and some we might trot out at some point. But as I mentioned, we were maybe outgunned in terms of our kind of growth and you know, user understanding at that point. I mean, it's a lot better than that, I guess. I mean, I think that like, it's always hard. There's always problems to solve. You know, you're certainly never like not afraid that you will mess something up or that it'll, you know, you'll have problems going forward. But I think that like, if you sort of think of like the long-term success of the company as kind of like a series of like step changes that need to happen in terms of like both our own capabilities as a company and then also the platforms enabling us to do certain things, you know, for example, monetize being kind of a big step change that needed to happen, right? The fact that that's working, for example, is like, okay, like if there's these like 7 necessary conditions for this to be a really successful company, you know, how many have we like checked off? You know, I don't know, maybe it's like 3 or 4 right now, which is a lot better than like 0 or 1, right? So, you know, so I mean, I'm feeling pretty good. I know we have a lot of work ahead, but it's a heck of a lot better than, you know, James, my co-founder, and I slowly burning down our own personal savings, building mobile apps that people don't use.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's building something people don't use. A lot of people think the benefit of like entrepreneurship is the financial side, but most entrepreneurs I've talked to are much more motivated by building something people want. And the best feeling is seeing people use the product that you've put into the world.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like, it's cool to have some success and some growth because it enables you to make more cool things that you want to make, right? I mean, you know, James and I always had this wall of Post-its, right? Very cliched in our apartment of like, you know, 200 things we thought would be cool ideas. And not that we thought they're all perfect or great ideas necessarily, but like, there were a lot of them that we wanted to make, and seeing at least like a little bit of success on the voice platforms kind of enables us to, you know, make more and more of those ideas that we're excited about. I think Walt Disney had some quote that I heard recently that I thought was really good, where he said like, "We don't make movies to make money; we make money to make movies." Basically,
great. Yeah, that's great.
It's a good little nugget from Walt. It's probably apocryphal, right? But yeah, I mean, we're not building skills to grow the company. We're trying to grow the company so we can, you know, build more entertainment, I guess. A lot less catchy than Walt, but I'll work on it.
Yeah, well, no, it's the meeting is still there. And so at what point did you decide to raise money and outside capital in regards to your journey building Volley?
Yeah, I mean, I think pretty early. I think sometime in like late 2016, even when we were working on Facebook Messenger. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I mentioned, we were working off of our personal savings and we were pretty short on runway, I guess I would say. And we saw like a little modicum of success with some of our Facebook Messenger products, and a couple early stage investors found them interesting. So we were able to raise like an extremely small amount of money to kind of keep us alive for a few more months. And then the voice stuff started taking off a little bit after that. And so once we got to like a few tens of thousands of monthly users on the voice thing, and the chart looked, you know, pretty nice. And we were like, oh wow, we could really use one or two more people to work on this stuff with us. You know, we could, you know, invest more in the skills that are working. We could, you know, double down on particular products. We could come up with new ideas, or, you know, be able to build them, that build things we haven't been able to build yet. So we raised, a pretty, you know, sort of like a pre-seed round after sort of we got to our couple tens of thousands of users. And so, I mean, it was mostly just like, we strongly felt like the platform was going to reach the point where you could build a viable business on top of it, but we also could really use some extra bodies and also not constantly be afraid of going broke personally. And so that was how we came to the calculus of trying to raise some money. But yeah.
And when you raised money, was this the second time, right? When you had some users using your skills games, were these venture investors? Were these angel investors? Did they find you? Did you find them? How did that process work? As someone who's just genuinely curious.
Yeah. I mean, it's, so it was, that was like, that round was led by, you know, I guess venture investors or, you know, seed investors or whatever you want to call it, you know, and it's, I mean, it's just a relentless grind. I mean, we found them, to say the least. Like I had a spreadsheet with 140 people on it.
So you did the cold email thing.
I didn't do the cold email thing completely, although I cold emailed some of them. I tried to find some sort of weird LinkedIn triple step connection to every single person, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I cold emailed a couple people, but it was like mostly just like bad warm intros. And yeah, I mean, we ended up talking to 120 people before we got like two of them to say yes, and kind of they knew each other, so they said yes together. So there was like some social proof plus like this round's actually going to happen thing happening there. And so they were, you know, seed funds, and then we were able to get, you know, some cool angels in on at that point too. But I mean, it was really hard. I mean, you spent like 3 months talking to people and just, yeah, I mean, getting told no, you know, 115 times or whatever it ended up being. So it's I don't know. Other people probably have had more success early stage fundraising than I have. But, you know, for a lot of those of your listeners out there, if there are any who are fundraising, I would just say don't stop at like 30 people and think that it's never going to happen.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, look, it's a, if you're not Clubhouse, it's a grind, right? And so.
Well, they came from Highlight, and before that, they came from something else. I'm sure at some point in their career, it was a grind, you know? I mean, like, you know, even, I don't know, the Airbnb guys always talk about the like 1,000 days of darkness and like 3 years that they didn't have any users, right? So Pinterest, same deal. I mean, like, nobody talks about the 3 years of grinding that everybody goes through before anything works, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's much easier and more fun to talk about the good times. But I mean, look, but you were persistent and you put this round together. And in this seed round, when you had these skills on the market, the, you know, 10,000 users, if you got 115 no's, what were the similarities in regards to the no's? Why were people not interested? Were they not interested in the voice space? Did they not think it had merit? Did they not think you were the right person to do this? What was the feedback and pushback you got? Because a lot of VC feedback could be very indirect.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like Sam Altman always says, like, believe the no, but don't believe the reason for someone passing on you. So I could give you the reasons, but they might not be true. Like, I mean, the reasons are always like very easy. It's like, well, you're too early. Well, I don't know if this is going to be a platform. Other companies have been crushed by Amazon. You know, you're too dependent on one company. You know, I don't know. But you obviously see companies with similar metrics raise, you know, 10 times as much money as we were raising at that point. Right. So in spaces that are, you know, debatably more interesting or not, you know, who knows? I mean, it's like, I think the reality is that if we had some like amazing VC behind us that was like, this voice thing is working and these guys are great, you should check this out, then probably these people would have been interested. And it's, you know, they don't know us, and, you know, the metrics, I guess, weren't overwhelmingly good. So you kind of, you know, it's a no, right? So, I mean, I understand where people are coming from. I mean, these people get thousands of pitches a year, right? So it's tough to filter. But I mean, is the truth like the reason? Yeah, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but it seemed like when you were doing this raise, this was like a necessity, a lifeline, basically. You weren't going to continue to self-fund it. So it wasn't like, maybe we should raise, let's see, let's give it a go. It was like, I need to make rent Friday, or, you know, in 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I think three, four months was probably where we got to at that point. Yeah. I mean, it was a necessity. We spent 3.5 years, you know, basically just grinding it out with contract jobs. So James and I were pretty good at like finding the next contract job when we were about to run out of money. But we certainly needed this a lot. But I think we were just like, we were authentically really excited about having, you know, tens of thousands of users, right? I mean,
it doesn't sound like a lot, but as someone who's built something, having tens of thousands of users across a network of skills is quite great.
It's pretty hard. Yeah. Yeah. Anyone out there who's like launched a consumer product telling me it's easy to get to like 10,000 MAU unless they're just pumping money into Facebook ads, like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So like, it's not that easy.
No,
but it's not. But I don't think we were like that good at storytelling at that point about like, this is the future, you know, get on board, you know, the train's coming or whatever. And also, I don't think we had a lot of credibility like in people's networks. So it was very easy to dismiss, right? So, you know, again, I mean, I don't hold it against anyone. I would just say you've got to find like your founder VC fit or whatever. If you don't have a lot of credibility or ridiculously good metrics, you got to find the people who are like willing to bet on, you know, entertainment or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned something really insightful there, which is the storytelling capability, because that's often what fundraising is. If you have 10,000 monthly active users and there's kind of a not as much data and you're kind of in the early stages, it's really just kind of sharing your tidbit and vision for the future, how your startup plays into that with basically a group of skeptical investors.
Yeah. I mean, you're never, especially at that stage, it's, you can always find metrics that comp poorly to other companies. I mean, like, it's virtually impossible to have a seed startup or a pre-seed startup that like doesn't have flaws all over its metrics, right? I mean, how could you not, right?
Yeah.
So it's very easy to pick apart seed or pre-seed investments. And so, you know, people do, which is fine. But yeah, I mean, the storytelling about, I guess the reason I recognize that we weren't that good at it is because I now know enough angels and VCs and stuff and to be like, oh, I'm looking at this company that like, they're going to do da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, what do you think? You know? And I'm like, so how many users do they have? And they're like, oh, well, they're sort of like pre-soft launch, you know, they maybe have like a couple hundred people on it or whatever. Right. And I'm like, wait, they haven't launched even or whatever. And they're like, yeah, but like, don't you think that blah, blah, blah is going to happen or something? And I guess maybe, but like, why don't you just see if they can get there?
Wait a week.
I don't know. or something. Right. So I just, now recognize in hearing these sort of like people running stuff by me that like, all they tell me is the idea. And maybe I'm just like callous, you know, running in a company right now. And we spend most of our time trying to think about the truth and where we actually are in terms of metrics, right? Rather than sort of the storytelling piece. And I think in the earlier stage, you really kind of need to be like selling the dream, as it were.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you ended up raising and then kind of grew the company. And at this point, I don't know if you probably can't tell me this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is the company profitable?
We are not profitable.
Is it a stretch to say that in 5 years, the company will be profitable? Like, can you see profitability in your future?
Yeah. I mean, what I would say is if we like really wanted to, I think in 3 months we could be profitable. That's not what our focus is right now. We're reasonably well capitalized. But if you were like, Max, you have to be profitable by like September 1st or October 1st or something, I think we could probably make it happen. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it would involve like firing anyone, to be clear. So,
so you're just in the growth mindset right now.
Yeah. I mean, we're in a growth mindset right now, right? We're playing offense right now.
Right. I mean, especially at your stage, like, you know, it's important that if you can grow your user base, you'll end up having higher returns in the future. It's not unheard of, in case you're wondering, in terms of startups.
I feel you.
Coming up, my conversation with Volley co-founder Max Child continues, but first, a quick message from our sponsor. You're listening to The Ones Who Succeed. I'm Campbell Barron. Welcome back to the program. I hope you're having a great day today. And I'm about halfway through my conversation with Volley co-founder Max Child. So we're going to jump right back into that combo. So Volley is like this network of skills. Mostly you mentioned, you use the word entertainment a lot because they're mostly games, right? And if I'm making this comparison to mobile, right, and I know it's a little flawed, but it's kind of the closest thing out there right now. What seemed to really propel mobile was the idea of the breakout app, right? So you had like a group of apps that were just really killing it on mobile in the early days, like, you know, Snap and Instagram and a lot of these social, probably the most prominent, right, were social apps. No one really talks about the B2B unicorn other than Zoom. And so if it seems like consumer apps have much more of a, they're much more appreciated, especially by consumers. And as a result, you know, you kind of had all these breakout apps being built in that. And, you know, when Instagram sold to Facebook for $1 billion, that was like a whoa moment, right? That these things are really valuable. And then I'm sure that really sparked a lot of developer interest. And you've mentioned earlier in this podcast that the hype has definitely worn off for kind of voice, and especially like with Amazon Echo and Google Home. But you've also mentioned that the user growth, just in terms of these smart speakers being acquired and implemented into households, has dramatically increased in the past, you know, 3 years. And you've mentioned something like 40% of American households have a smart speaker in their home, which is pretty a really interesting statistic. Now, while Volley's very successful, and anyone who's known, you know, who plays games on Alexa is very familiar with your skills, like Yes Sire and just kind of your network in general, I would make that bet, because if you kind of go through the App Store, you guys are pretty much on the front page there in the game section. But if you're comparing Volley to Snapchat, you guys definitely have a ways to go. Why do you think there hasn't been a kind of break? They use the word breakout skill or breakout app. Why do you think there hasn't been a breakout skill in the voice space at this point? And is that, am I thinking in the wrong mindset, or is that something that we are going to see in the next 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. I don't know. I guess I would like take a slightly different angle, which is like, you know, we definitely see ourselves as like an entertainment company, as you mentioned, right? So mm-hmm. our goal is to, you know, build sort of, I guess, a Netflix style kind of unified network of entertainment, right? And you know, you might sort of not recognize that the goal is to build this all into a network, because like they're, you know, standalone web right. pages or whatever, right? They look like they're separate apps, right? But the goal for us is to create, you know, a unified experience across, you know, games, storytelling, sleep content, morning content, that kind of thing, and to have kind of one aggregated subscription that provides you sort of all this value in all these different areas. So kind of, you know, Netflix, you know, style unified entertainment subscription. And so, you know, the question I get a lot is like, well, like, are you just building more games or more products or whatever? Is that your strategy, right? Like, are you just throwing things against the wall or whatever? And I would say like, well, kind of, yeah. I mean, again, if you look at Netflix, like, are they just throwing things against the wall, or are they just investing in building more content, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's like, well, I mean, I guess on some level you could say both, but like, you know, yes, we are investing in more content, and some succeeds, you know, really dramatically, and some, you know, has some success. Some is sort of under the radar, actually really, really used a lot, but maybe not as like sort of prominent in terms of what people notice. And so I think that like, we definitely believe there's an opportunity, not just for us, but for companies to build these sort of, you know, unified entertainment networks on voice platforms. And we also think that like, given that these devices are mostly in the home, the analogy kind of holds, you know, to something that might be on your television or something like that. And so, you know, are we going to see more quote unquote breakouts? I don't know. I mean, like, breakouts are sort of determined by the press to some degree, right? And so it's like when, you know, like, I guess I would say our metrics compare very favorably to lots of apps that you have heard of, let's say. So does it matter or not? I you know, sometimes I guess we don't mind trying to build up our metrics, build up our competence, expand our content, and just sort of, you know, build more value for our customers. And sort of, you know, the hype cycle goes up and down, but you know, we'll be there either way, I guess.
Yeah. So that Netflix comparison is very interesting, actually. So you see yourself as kind of Volley as the Netflix, and then your individual shows or original programming would be considered your skills, basically. And yeah. So the same way Netflix would release, you know, Tiger King or whatever, you'd be releasing a new skill. And Netflix, by the way, like you said, does release a lot of the vast majority of their originals are not, you know, Tiger King. So,
right, exactly. They probably didn't think Tiger King was going to be Tiger
exactly.
King.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Who did? So, yeah. I mean, I think that's a very interesting analogy. And in that sense, do you see Volley as a technology company, or do you see it as a content company?
I mean, I think like, I do believe in like the Marc Andreessen thing about, you know, software eating the world, right? And I think that he had like a secondary argument, which was that the corollary to that is that like the companies that have the best software in every industry will become the best companies in that industry. So his take was like, you know, the best software company in finance will become Stripe or Square or something, right? Or the best, you know, software company in cars will become Tesla, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. And so like our goal, I think, is to be, you know, the best software company in entertainment. And does that mean we're a media company or a tech company? I mean, probably tech is in our bones. I mean, the majority of people who work for the company are engineers. You know, we are in San Francisco, right? We're definitely driven by strong belief in great technology and great, you know, product management, data science, a lot of Silicon Valley sort of ideologies, whatever, yeah. You know, but we also believe that like great content and great, you know, liberal arts experiences and great feelings that we can create for people are like the heart or the soul of our products, right? So I can't really give you like a single answer there, but I think that we believe that our hope is that the intersection of great technology and great entertainment is a place that's worth being, and hopefully we can succeed there.
I mean, you must have content people though that aren't engineers working for you. So there's like writers.
Although, yeah, I mean, we honestly, I mean, we have product management and sort of user experience management. You know, we don't have any full-time in-house writers right now, although my co-founder James is actually a great writer and has written a lot of our products. We've contracted a lot of writers and we work with a lot of, you know, freelance writers that we go back to mm-hmm. over and over again. And we have worked with some great creators on the kind of morning content front, you know, some people who really consistently put out great, great content every day that we're very thankful to be able to work with. But, you know, yeah, I mean, in the end, I think our goal is to be the best software company in entertainment. And that requires that you understand what is great entertainment and what is fun, you know, or what is joy? How do you create joy through entertainment? But I think that there's a lot of insights from Silicon Valley that are mostly missing from entertainment industry, other than Netflix, let's say, right?
Now, if I told you in 2019 that yeah. on June 25th, 2020, you'd be talking with a 17-year-old, you'd probably be like, oh God, what's up? No, I told you, if I told you in June of 2020, you were going to be kind of locked in your house or home or apartment, whatever it may be, minimizing contact, people who are not working will be really bored and we'll really be looking for new things to do. I can't not mention the COVID-19 pandemic because it's really just changing the way tech has worked. It's changing the way, you know, we communicate, we interact, we get entertainment. And as a result, I have to imagine that Volley has seen an uptick in users, and there are companies that are hurting right now, like WeWork, and there are companies that are doing great, like Zoom. And it's a pretty binary thing. And so how is Volley doing in this pandemic? And how have you noticed kind of the voice ecosystem evolve with COVID-19?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, sort of, I think the impacts are still sort of rolling out, and it'll be hard to see long term kind of what happens. I mean, I think, you know, it's tragic. And I think that the economic impact of the pandemic is still not really understood and could be sort of horrendous and for us and many other companies, you know, down the road that we're not really aware of yet, right. Even though, you know, the governments have been pumping money into the economy. And so sort of saving us from the short-term pain. I think we are thankful as a company that, yeah, I mean, it's mostly been a tailwind. You know, we've been able to continue to invest in growth and, you know, build more products and not have to, you know, do layoffs or God forbid, like shut down the company. You know, I don't think it's not like Zoom where we're like 20xing our daily users or something
Netflix.
Like that, right? Yeah, I think, I mean, Netflix, it would be interesting to know what the actual sort of impact on the metrics are because Netflix was already so penetrated in right. US households. But, you know, yeah, I mean, we're probably closer to Netflix than Zoom where we've definitely seen some growth that probably wouldn't have happened otherwise. It has not been 5xing our users or something like that.
But you're not, your users aren't dipping. Number, it's not yeah, like, it's not like there's a pandemic inside your house and people are forced to leave.
Right. Exactly. It's definitely, it's definitely been a net, you know, positive for us. It definitely is more of a positive for kind of our live multiplayer products where people are spending time with other people in their homes, mm-hmm. particularly in like March and April. For more single player, you know, sleep and morning products, it's up, but not a ton. So it's been positive for our business short term, but not like, insanely positive. And so I think we're also always, you know, careful to make sure that we're, you know, doing good long-term planning in addition to good short-term planning. But I don't know. I mean, in the end, like even pre-COVID, you know, people spend a lot of time at home and they're bored a lot of the time. And so, I mean, as an entertainment company and they want to connect with their friends and family, we were sort of, I'd like to think, resting on some fairly like firm ground in terms of something humans will always want to do, which is like bring joy to their lives while they're at home with friends and family. And people obviously spending a little more time at home in March and April than they were before. But, you know, it's, I think, you know, there will always be a fair amount of opportunity for us.
Yeah. I mean, if on that note, in terms of the macro, do you think COVID has resulted in more growth just in terms of the smart speaker space in general?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting question. I mean, it's always instructive to go to like amazon.com and see how hard they're pumping Alexa devices, you know, because if you look at like, you know, Black Friday or Christmas, it's always like a huge front page thing, right? I haven't seen as much of that. You know, I think a lot of these speakers are gifted to people, so they're sort of more of a holiday thing a lot of the time. And again, I mean, I think with something like 40% household penetration, I mean, you probably don't see quite as much like, oh my God, I don't have one of these, I need it right now type thing. But I mean, it's probably up, but I honestly don't know. You know, I assume, you know, people are being fairly conservative with their finances right now also. And so probably not a lot of completely sort of entertainment driven purchases at this point.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I mean, in terms of getting away from COVID, in terms of like mass adoption, right? So I definitely think a voice and smart speakers have found product market fit in the sense that the speaker devices are used. We lost power for about 10 seconds, probably about 2 weeks ago, and Alexa and everything reset. And I was actually, you know, asked what's the weather and check my to-do list, and it didn't work. And I took a pause and actually didn't know what to do. So it's definitely become, I've definitely, you know, noticed that it has product market fit in the sense that, you know, checking the weather, et cetera, doing the basic tasks. But in terms of skills, it's still like a section on the Alexa app. And I would argue that the discoverability is probably one of the hardest parts of this whole kind of development cycle in voice. And how far are we from just people interacting with all sorts of skills, not just games, but productivity, et cetera? And I think that's a development problem too, because, you know, if you build more skills that people will find useful, then they'll probably use it. But I think it's also a discoverability problem. So how far are we out from kind of mass skill adoption in kind of voice?
Yeah, I don't know about, like, it's hard to make a prediction on that front, like exactly how far we are. I mean, we're just trying to keep, you know, headed the right direction, I guess, at our company. I think that, like, I mean, even on the App Store, which is sort of, or the web, which is sort of the, like, the supposed paragons of discoverability, right? It's still very hard to get your product off the ground, right? And I think that the way you get things off the ground on any platform are, like, pretty straightforward. It's either like interpersonal distribution or, you know, virality, whatever you want to call it, people sharing with each other, right? In which case you need like robust social features, which I think both platforms are working on, but aren't very robust right now. So I think you need the ability to send your friend a challenge, or you need, you know, share a skill with a friend, or cooperate on some sort of, you know, story or game or something in a seamless way that's native to the platforms. You know, another way things get discovered is basically via search. So asking for something on the web, you know, there's obviously Google, and then you discover a website that way through some sort of SEO type thing. And I think the search engine capabilities of the platforms, obviously Google is a search engine company that's escalating, but Amazon as well, I think, are investing in the sort of skill discovery via search capabilities. And then, you know,
what does that look like? Sorry to cut you off. I'm just curious. Via search.
Yeah.
From your knowledge.
I mean, I think people are just going to ask these devices increasing numbers of random questions. And I think they probably all are already asking a ton of random questions. And the platforms will get a lot better at routing those random questions to a skill or whatever that can serve their needs, right? So I think that you'll see big businesses built on the back of search-driven discovery, similar to the way you've seen on the web around Google search. And then the third way, you know, you have social distribution, search discovery, and then finally, you know, paid acquisition, essentially, you know, advertising, acquiring users in a way that's, you know, net profitable for your company. I think that, you know, both platforms have, I think, rightly been nervous about having obtrusive ads in the experience. You know, I don't think you want to be like spammed by some annoying insurance ad in the middle of listening to whatever music or playing one of our games. But I do think some opportunities to pay to get your skill in front of people, I assume, are coming or will come to sort of allow people to build their businesses that way as well. And so, you know, discovery and growth are largely functions of one or all three of those continuing to sort of grow in capability on these platforms, because the usage is there, the users are there, the monetization, you know, is well on its way. And so sort of natural laws of like economics are that like people like me will find a way to get customers if you give us tools in those areas, you know. Not that we will necessarily, but you know, companies, right? I mean, Adam Smith sense or whatever. And so I think that, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as all three of those get better, discovery will continue to improve in, you know, across the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. I think that's an interesting insight, especially when considering the fact that if you could basically be the skill that Alexa is routing to, or I mean, there could be many that they're routing to, and they just do it in various batches based on your interests, etc., for getting a babysitter or, you know, booking a hotel or even smaller tasks like that. I think there's definitely an opportunity there. I mean, I think the simple tasks will do well on Echo first and Google Home. I actually think, unlike the App Store, there is still quite a bit of room to create really engaging skills that do simple tasks. But I know
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And I guess one thing I failed to mention is I think visual devices are going to continue to expand the opportunities for discovery and engagement, right? I mean, Echo shows with screens, you know, Fire TVs are becoming voice enabled increasingly, I think, other devices. Yeah, I just think the more, you know, with visual displays involved, there's also a lot of angles in terms of discovery that have not yet really been tapped.
Yeah, no, that's really good. That's a very true perspective. I mean, as someone who's kind of working in this space and is constantly developing skills, definitely more in the entertainment space, what do you think creates a compelling skill or a compelling game? Tell me all your secrets, Max.
I definitely don't have all the secrets. I mean, there's like a lot of answers to that question. I think there's like necessary things, and then there's like nice to haves, I guess. I think that if we just focus on gaming to start with, I think that like any good game is sort of built around what they call like a core loop, which essentially is that you carry out some task over and over again that, you know, you reap some value out of, that then you can reinvest that value into completing that task in some new, more interesting way, or trying something new. Obviously, that's a very like scientific way to put it, but it is like the essence of good gaming experiences, having a great core loop, something that people can do thousands of times over and over and over again, and then building sort of more complicated game mechanics around that. I think maybe to sort of get to more your question generally, like I think a lot of voice experiences today are sort of bad ports of mobile or web experiences. A lot like a lot of early iPhone apps were sort of bad ports of web experiences, right? Or just sort of throwaway experiences. Like, I mean, I had the first iPhone, or when the App Store came out in 2008, you had those like drinking a beer or whatever.
I've mentioned drinking a beer so many times as an example of an early app.
The like fart noise skills were really popular, you know, and then like somewhat sketchy pornographic apps were pretty popular. Like,
yeah, before they put in really strict guidelines.
Mm-hmm. People forget how much junk there was in the App Store in 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. It's like, everyone's like, wow, like all the skills are like very like simplistic and sort of silly. And I'm like, dude, like I had the first iPhone, I had the second iPhone, I had the third iPhone. Like there was a lot of junk, you know? So I think that like, to come back to the initial point, I do think there's a design to a voice-driven experience, an audio-driven experience, whatever you want to call it, that I think requires a completely new kind of skill set that's closer to like screenwriting than it is to like conventional user experience design. And I think we're lucky to have some really great user experience designers at our company that have, you know, either come up through the voice world or learned really well how to create great voice experiences. But it's a lot more like writing well than it is like you know, building a UI for an iPhone app.
Like, it's storytelling.
It's storytelling, but it's also guiding people. I mean, it's like interviewing someone a little bit, like you're doing right now. I mean, you're trying to lead me with questions into answering them in interesting ways, right? Like,
right.
A lot of Alexa skill design or Google Action design is like asking leading questions in a way that the user doesn't find constraining, but also that is kind of constraining so that we can recognize the response in a way that brings, you know, the experience forward, right? Mm-hmm. People spend a lot of time, you know, answering questions that have very obvious answers, actually, and they don't find that that uninteresting most of the time, as long as you find it, make it entertaining. I mean, Yes Sire was sort of the quintessential example of this when we created that, which was like, we built Spelling Bee, which had terrible recognition because the letters wouldn't work. And so we were totally burned by that experience. And so we were like, okay, let's build a game that literally could not have any recognition problems. And so we were like, okay, it's just a yes-no interface. And then we're like, well, how do we make a yes-no game fun? And then we started like playing around with other experiences that were similar. And so we were able to kind of derive this game that had the most simple interface imaginable, right? But it's still pretty fun if the writing's good, you know? I mean, if the storytelling's good and you ask the questions in the right way and the core loop is solid, you can create a fun experience even with a very limited voice interface. So yeah, I mean, it's a developing field and our whole company is trying to get better at it. We're always trying to improve. We're always trying to, you know, innovate. But it's interesting. It's really cool. And I truly believe that, like, I believe, you know, the majority of our computers in our lives will be voice controlled in like 10 years. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe obviously I'm biased, but I think that, like,
just a little bit,
it's obviously the most natural interface to me. I mean, it's the one your 3-year-old can use and your, like, my 90-plus-year-old grandmother can use. So how could it not kind of be the end game of interfaces until we get to the brain computer interface, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I think what's interesting about Volley in general is you're kind of, I compared it to Snap in a way, but that's totally a wrong comparison because your model is really just shots on goal, right? Snap's putting all their eggs in one basket, right? And then if Facebook decides to launch a similar feature, then they're in a little bit of trouble, right? And you guys, if you have a competitor with one of your X amount of skills, you're not great, but you'll be okay. Just as long as you keep developing these skills. And I think that's an interesting model and it's probably a safer model to begin with. And then, I mean, look, in 5 years, if you have a skill that's just doing so much better than all your other ones combined, maybe you could, you know, direct a little bit more energy there. But right now, I think you're doing the strategy behind the company seems to be effective.
I mean, again, like Netflix, I really do think there's opportunities to fill different parts of people's days and different days of their weeks and different sort of jobs to be done with entertainment. And, you know, I'm not saying we're trying to do literally everything, but like, I think there's an opportunity to link different entertainment experiences together on the voice platform, you know, in the same way that sometimes Netflix has amazing feature films that you're totally, you know, engaged in leaning in on. And sometimes they have reality shows that go for 20 hours that you just leave on in the background while you're cooking, right? I think we expect to have both of those types of experiences.
Yeah. I think it's I think that's models beneficial. When you guys are looking at the kind of developing new games, are those ideas that you or your co-founder have? Is it like someone on the street walks up to you and tells you this idea for a game? Employees, like how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mix. Definitely a lot of our cool projects have come out of like employee brainstorming. We do like hackathons and certainly some cool ideas have come out of the hackathon projects. You know, I think James and I definitely had, like I said, a huge wall of post-its of ideas and things we wanted to build. And so sometimes we, you know, bring those to the table. So it's definitely a mix. I mean, obviously the first couple of things were pretty much from James and my discussions, but over time it's been really cool because a lot of our newer projects have come out of team members, you know. So I feel very lucky to work with like such creative people, I guess, because there's a lot of cool stuff coming out.
Yeah. I mean, if you build the right culture, the ideas will kind of flow within the company for sure. I mean, what is your day-to-day look like at Volley? And I know now it's probably a little bit skewed, right? Because you're at home. But in terms of just general tasks, and even before this pandemic, presumably you had an office. What occupied your day if you weren't writing code?
Yeah, I haven't written that much code in the last 2 years, unfortunately.
That's a good thing. That means you're growing.
yeah, Yeah, right. I mean, definitely, I guess, you know, post-corona, basically spend 4 to 6 hours on Zoom per day. And I mean, those are mixed between internal meetings, planning, you know, one-on-ones, you know, talking to our investors, you know, working with Amazon and Google, you know, working with potential partnerships around content, all that kind of thing. You know, if I get free time, you know, doing podcasts, obviously I do tons of podcasts. No, I'm kidding. If I get free time, I mean, recently, sometimes I hack around on code.
What do you mean by that? It's, I mean, app, so skills.
I was an app developer really only. So I really only know how to make iOS apps. I'm kind of single talented. So I make mobile apps for fun, basically, most of which I don't launch or anything.
Are they games or?
They're mostly like entertainment and media. Yeah. I mean, they're not like games in like the Unity game sense, but you know, they're mostly like entertainment media, social little ideas. Sometimes they're like some direction I think we might want to experiment with the company, and I just want to make a little hacky version of it myself.
Yeah, I mean, but the Volley also has some iOS apps too, right? So what's the strategy there actually?
I mean, again, we really think we are trying to build products that are available at all times and like fill different parts of your life, from like when you're waking up to, you know, when you're in your car, to coming home, to wearing your AirPods, to, you know, dinner table, to sleep, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying we've like perfectly nailed all of those experiences and tied them together exactly right now, but that is sort of the dream. And I think that, you know, again, I mean, I think we talked about at the beginning, I think voice is an interface. It's not like a device, right? I think that I truly believe we're going to have like 10 different devices in our lives that are voice controlled to a large degree. And so you'll have some smart speakers, you'll have a television that's voice controlled, you'll have a car that's voice controlled, you'll have AirPods, you know, you'll have your iPhone or, you know, Android phone, and you'll have probably glasses that are voice controlled in the next 10 years, right? So I think, I mean, this might be a wrong prediction, I guess, but I think this is like the first time that the computing industry, the next wave is going to be cross-device or whatever you want to call it.
So more, you know, than just one platform or two.
Well, more than one hardware device. Like it might be all Alexa across those 10 different things, or it might be all Google Assistant across those 10 different things. I honestly believe that like as a company in the long term, we're going to have to build an entertainment layer that spans 10 different devices, right? And that fills all the different parts of your day in the way that makes sense for that part of your life or that moment or that what you want right then, right? So I think that, you know, we have to, you know, start experimenting with being everywhere and learn from mistakes and just iterate on kind of linking everything together into sort of a unified voice entertainment experience.
In the skills story, we're still in a place, and I kind of like this, where it's underrated and there's lots of opportunity. It's much harder in the App Store, in my opinion, just in terms of the competitiveness of the App Store, right? It's very clear that apps are a core part of people's day-to-day life. And so do you still see an opportunity for iOS apps to thrive and to be disruptive?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Disruptive is a specific question, I guess. But
well, I guess thrive. Thrive, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take on thrive, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I think, you know, similar to the way everyone complains about discovery on voice, I think everyone complains about discovery on mobile.
I'm seeing a trend.
Yeah, I mean, welcome to the show, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if your product naturally self-distributes, right, then you have probably a successful product, right? Because distribution is baked into the core of the product. I mean, you're talking about Snapchat, right? Like, the idea is you send disappearing photos to your friends. So you go get your friends so that you can send disappearing photos to them and they can send disappearing photos to you. And like,
yeah,
okay,
it's inherently
cool.
Viral.
It's inherently viral, right? I mean, Instagram, I was like, I used Instagram in the first couple months when it was launched. And like, it was really about putting cool filters on your photos and then like posting that to your Facebook or to your Twitter or something. It wasn't like, you didn't really post to Instagram because there was like nobody on Instagram. So it was like, it was like you made a cool photo and then you sent it to someone somewhere else, kind of.
Yeah.
Right?
My mom downloaded it, pissed off that there was a social network attached to it. Just wanted to take screenshots of her photos with the filters.
Everyone like forgets that there was like legitimately an extended debate over whether or not Instagram or Hipstamatic would win the photo filter wars.
Hipstamatic. And, like, nobody, oh my God.
Nobody remembers like, oh yeah, Hipstamatic was like exactly the same as Instagram, a photo filter app, but it was paid. Bad for virality. And also they didn't build the social network in which you could post these filtered photos and like slowly build the network, right? Like, but you know, that's a self-distributing product, right? You take your photo and you need to show the photo to someone and they say, wow, how did you make that cool looking photo? And you're like, I made it on Instagram, right? and you're starting to see this with some of these SnapKit apps recently, like, you know, they're designed to do something to a picture or tell you what celebrity you look like or something and then be posted to Snapchat, right? But that's mm-hmm. like the core of the product and yeah. or, you know, asking quiz questions about your friends, right? YOLO something, right? Mm-hmm. So like there's always room for like self-distributing products, but you really have to design them to be self-distributing. And the core value prop of them has to be that you share them with someone.
Mm-hmm. And from the macro, what is your ambition for Volley in the future? What's your game plan? Are you looking for an IPO? Or are you looking for an exit? I mean, I know that's probably not your game plan, but what's the goal with the company?
I mean, yeah, again, to come back to the Netflix analogy, you know, I just think there's an opportunity for a Netflix level of company that's built around, you know, voice entertainment or audio entertainment or whatever you want to call it. And I think that, you know, certainly Spotify is, you know, trying to head that direction. But I think our hope, I guess, is that the interactivity and the sort of entertainment element of our products allow us to succeed in the long run, you know, against a Spotify, let's say. Mm-hmm. So
you're waiting for your acquisition call from Daniel Ek. So that's what you're telling me.
No, I don't. Come on, man. We just want to be bigger than Spotify. You know, mm-hmm.
we'll acquire them. All yeah. right. Daniel, watch out if you're listening.
Daniel, what's up? I got an offer for you. No, I don't know. I mean, like, I think, I don't know. I think something you've asked about again and again, how do you get discovered on new platforms? Is mm-hmm. there opportunity? Whatever. I think there's a lot of opportunity here. There's a lot of undiscovered country. And, you know, anytime there's a lot of undiscovered country and a lot of users, and we have, you know, proof that, you know, like I said, maybe three or four of those seven checkboxes are checked off, I think that there's opportunities to build a really, really big company and make a lot of cool products.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, Max. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you for inviting me. And I have to congratulate you on building this ridiculous list of guests. I think I sent you over email that I'm definitely the least impressive person I think you've ever interviewed based on your list of guests. So I'm just like, I'm lucky to be here in the Campbell Barron zone right now.
Oh, well, it's awesome to add Max Child to that awesome list.
Yeah. I promise this will be your least listened to episode.
No, definitely not. That's Volley co-founder Max Child, one of the ones who succeed. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, it would be amazing if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out. Or why not tell a friend? That also helps new listeners discover the show. I really appreciate it. If you want to see clips from the show and stay up to date with what I'm working on, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. My username is @CampbellJBaron, and my YouTube channel is my name, Campbell Barron. You've made it to the end of the show. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Campbell Barron, and I'll be back in no time.